This is Autoline After Hours with John McElroy and Gary Vasilash, episode 404 for December 22nd of 2017, Tidings of Discomfort and Joy. Watch Autoline After Hours live at autoline.tv every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 p.m. Pacific. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Autoline in iTunes, Stitcher, or YouTube.
Autoline After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires, your journey, our passion, and by Lear, a global leader in automotive seating and electrical systems.
Well, ho, 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 Gary. How'd you like that Boy, very Christmas-themed open?
Beginning to look a lot like Christmas.
Right.
Absolutely. It's fantastic. This may have outdone Halloween, as you recall.
Halloween, I like that a lot, too. Yeah. So we'll have to see. Let's see how the show goes, because we're going to put the onus on our two special guests here today. We got the two Mikes. We've got Mike Whalen and Mike Martinez, both from Automotive News. Yep. You guys do your own webcast, right? All mic'd up?
We do. We switch the name. We call it Weekend Drive now every Saturday
morning. Oh, I like all mic'd up. I thought that was clever.
Hey, Weekend Drive's pretty good, too, you guys. Okay. We'll have you guys on sometime.
Okay, you're on with that. So we should explain to the audience, for those who have never heard this before, we've been doing this, they tell me, for about 5 years now. At the end of the year, last show of the year, and that's what this is. We're not going to be on next week because the crew deserves a week off, and we're taking it. But anyway, we always try to figure out who in the automotive industry deserves a big lump of coal for doing something stupid or boneheaded, or conversely, who deserves a present for outstanding performance in any way, shape, or form. And
you know, it occurs to me that the auto industry, I mean, we're going to give out coal, but you know, compared to the politicians and the actors in Hollywood, that the amount of coal that Santa's going to have to deliver to them is just so enormous that, you know, there's going to be very little left over for
the
auto industry.
There's some naughty people in the industry this
year. Yeah, but I'm just saying.
There's going to be some coal.
All right, we should start with your...
Okay.
Start with your coal.
Okay, yeah, Mike Whalen. Who deserves a lump of coal this year?
You know, let's just start right out of the gate. I'm going to go with the Dodge Demon. I didn't know to put this either as a gift or coal because it's so demonic, but it's so great. And you know what? With the amount of fuel it's going to burn, and if we talk about EPA regulations and just everything like that, I really think the Dodge Demon gets the first lump of coal, not because it's necessarily bad, but just because it's demonic. And you kind of have to put it on the naughty list.
Oh,
see, I was gonna give it a present. I mean, it's just where I give Dodge a present because I mean, let's face it. I mean, if you look at their sales numbers for the past few years, I mean, they've not been doing particularly well
on a very old platform,
right? But I mean, so what do they do? So they say, you know what? To hell with it. We're just gonna come out and do something crazy. And so they come out with, you know, the vehicle that has 840 horsepower.
I love these guys. It's like they have blinders on. They don't care about autonomous. They don't care about electrification or any of this newfangled stuff. They're just gonna put a really badass engine in a really old platform,
right,
and make it fun.
And the marketing is brilliant on it. It was with the Hellcat.
Yeah.
I mean, the Hellcat's been carrying them now for 2 years, I believe now, and then coming out with the Demon, that's going to be a limited run, and to get this much attention for it,
right?
It's so good, it's bad. I mean,
Well, I like what you're saying. It is naughty. It's a very naughty car, but it deserves a present.
There's a little gray area there.
There is a gray area.
So maybe it's coal wrapped in a present.
Well, you know, Carmen and Katie just brought up a nice little graphic of the lump of coal with a green ribbon around it.
That too. So.
I will say, I don't want to be the Debbie Downer of the group here, but there is some safety concerns surrounding this car, right? If you go over a drop of water on that thing, you're going to be in some trouble. Not quite the safest. I know our own.
And you're talking about the tires that are on it, which are truly race tires. And you're right. If it's wet or snowy out, don't go out in it.
This car's really meant for the track for professional, very skilled drivers. And if you're not careful, you could do some damage to yourself. You could do some damage to others.
But you can't single just out the Demon for that, too, because there's a lot of high performance cars, very low profile summer tires that are equally as dangerous in wet weather as the Demon is.
And let's face it, for $85,000, they're not going to be a bunch of guys, you know, buying this thing that are going to be like, yeehaw, you know, let's take it down on Telegraph,
yeah,
you know,
let's see what we're doing every day.
Yeah, let's see what we can do with, I mean, and what you, it was limited, was it 3,300 cars or something that they're going to be building?
Yeah. I thought it was even less than that, but yeah, it was somewhere around there. And I mean, Tim Kuniskis has just done an amazing job of resurrecting and keeping that brand in the spotlight for the products that they have. I mean, look, they still have the Dodge Journey out there, and in Canada, the Grand Caravan. I mean, it's an old brand right now, but it feels so fresh and so new.
Yeah, I like when you go to the Hellcat, Tim Kuniskis told me he had budgeted to build 2,500 cars. That was in the business plan. And when he told me this over the summer, they had sold 25,000 at that point. So it's a nice way to go wrong on your business plan. So, okay, Mr. Mike Martinez, let's go with the present this time. We got this gray area from Mike Wayland. What do you want to go with, Mike?
I'll go present. I'll be nice.
Okay.
Subaru.
Yeah.
They officially hit the six-year mark in terms of consecutive monthly sales streaks. That's impressive any way you cut it. It seems like they really have found the right segment to be in to put out great vehicles. I was talking with our Subaru beat reporter, Jack Walsworth, over at Auto News, and he was saying that maybe they're just a little bit different, right? You look at their holiday commercials this year. They don't have a big car with a bow on it. They're talking more about the charity work they're doing and more about the company itself. So they're a little bit different. People seem to resonate with that. Younger millennials buying those crossovers like crazy. And you see what they did in L.A.? Really nice three-row SUV there. So they're hitting on all the right segments. And who knows, maybe they'll hit 7 years next year.
So let me ask you about this marketing approach of focusing on charity rather than focusing on vehicles. I mean, it seems that every year Mazda does the same thing, right? I mean, and then they talk about what they're doing. And sure. God bless them for doing that sort of thing. But does it move sheet metal?
Who cares? You remember it.
They even
right?
need it at this point I mean, Subaru is just, the sales records just keep coming. And I think with the three-row SUV, as long as they're crossover, as long as they got it right, unlike they did last time, I mean, they're just going to keep growing. And they're in the segments right now where they need to be, and that outdoor feel and the love event and all of that. I mean, there was a show, Modern Housewife, I think, whatever it's called. They did just an episode on where they talked about the Subaru emotional commercial where the dad is driving his daughter in the Subaru, and then he turns around, and now she's driving it. Mm. I mean, they're just going for the emotional play and their incentives. I mean, they're doing all these sales with hardly any incentives. It's
amazing. Let's be honest, Gary. When you're talking about marketing, it doesn't really matter what you're selling, just as long as the commercial, whatever you're doing, is memorable.
So at what point does Subaru go from being essentially a niche product or, you know, a somewhat off the mainstream product to one that another record and now we're in it? You know, now we're a Chevy.
Well, and that's what you have to balance. You got to be careful with that, right? Because everybody sometimes wants to chase scale and wants to be the biggest and the best just to have that bragging right. And sometimes it's better to stay in your own lane and to be a niche player and to do what you do best and not have to be a giant like VW or Ford or Chevy.
Right, but are they doing that?
I think it's still a ways away. I think they're okay.
No. In one word, never. They're never going to be Chevy. And they're going to get acquired by somebody maybe eventually down the road when we see more consolidation with autonomous vehicles, EVs, and regulations and everything like that. But I don't think they're ever going to grow to be the size of Chevy or anything. They're just going to stay in their niche, keep growing, and be profitable, go from there.
Yeah, well, you know, Subaru's only a success story like it is in the American market. It hasn't replicated any of this anywhere in the world. I want to say they do about 1 million units worldwide sales, and what, 600,000-700,000 of those are in the United States. So that gives you an idea of just how small the company is in the rest of the world. But I do think they are getting to that point. Very close, Gary. What are they going to do this year? 600,000, 700,000? And now they're bringing out this three-row Ascent SUV, crossover, whatever. That's going to bring in a whole new customer who hasn't come to Subaru before. Sure, some of their customers will move up, but it's also opening the door to other people who just say, you don't have anything big enough for my needs. I think they're getting close to it. But I love what you bring up. I mean, their advertising is brilliant. They don't talk, you know, here's the latest deal. They don't even talk a whole lot about the technology. They talk about love. They talk about, they show the dogs, they do this charitable work. I think that really helps from a brand image. It really nails it for them.
Especially this time of year. You're seeing commercial after commercial, you know, retail-wise all over the place, and especially in the car market, too. You can't tell a Lexus from a Lincoln from whatever half the time in terms of the commercials.
Right.
But this one you can.
Yeah. Okay, Gary's looking up what the sales are.
All right, so fill air while I'm
well. No, because it's your turn to pick.
All right, so just so far Subaru this year, 584,000. That was through November,
and okay. So they'll do six and a half.
Yeah,
something
six
like
and a half.
That. Something like that. Anyway, yeah.
All right, so what am I doing, Cole or
what do you
or,
want?
It doesn't matter.
It's your show, man. You both, can pick what you want.
All right, so. The aforementioned Chevy, I want to give a present to Mary Barra because I would argue that she's accomplished what few others thought that she could, which was made General Motors a company relevant for the 21st century.
That is a very good point, and I actually had a present to give to GM for their EV strategy overall because we've been hearing about this for, I mean, a decade now, and we've been hearing about autonomous vehicles. I mean, I was in my first one 5-6 years ago. And they're the first company to come out there and actually lay out their plan, a plan that they are actually planning to implement in the next decade with 20 EVs by 2023. And I was just impressed that they were actually able to depict this vision, and hopefully they can actually execute on it. And she's kind of been leading the way for that, as well as Dan Ammann with kind of right-sizing the business operation, mm-hmm. exiting markets that they can't kind of be number one in, and really going to that mobility segment.
And look at what she came into with
right.
the whole ignition switch mess. There was a lot of ways she could have screwed that up or made it work,
mm-hmm.
and she didn't. And credit has to go to her for handling it with class, handling it with as much you know, classes she could there.
Right.
And she steered the ship. She kept it in the right direction. And they've been very proactive when it comes to this future technology.
Mm-hmm.
You look at guys like Ford, they're playing catch up. Their decisions.
And 2 years ago, I believe they were in the lead.
I thought the same thing, John, actually. Yeah.
And now everything they do is almost in response to something that GM did maybe a week or two before.
Mm-hmm. Right. No, in fact, earlier this year, there was this thing, picking the most important women in business. And Mary Barra was at the top. And one of the local media outlets called me, you know, to get some soundbite. What did I think about it? And all I could say is, it's too bad that this is limited to only female CEOs in business. Because if you included men, I believe, in the automotive industry right now, Mary Barra is the best CEO in the business. Mm-hmm. And based on what you guys are saying, their strategy for electrification, even better yet, their strategy for mobility and autonomy, I think is way ahead of everybody else.
It still is a very big risk, though. And to be honest, the autonomous stuff and the mobility as a service, I don't see as the biggest risk. The EVs are what I see as the biggest risk for the company. Because
no one's buying EVs.
Yeah. And, you know, mobility service is great. Yeah. Uber, Lyft, Maven. I can see those continuing to proliferate. But the EVs, that is the biggest risk I think the company's going into.
But every company, not just GM.
Yes.
Every company. You know, we had Hao Tai-Tang in here, the head of product development for Ford and purchasing. And he said by his count, there's like, by 2022, there's like 120 plus EV models hitting the market. Yeah, I just don't see the demand.
Well, let's also keep in mind, while she's juggling the EVs and the autonomous, they're also making a heck of a lot of money today. Mm-hmm. Those margins are really nice. What they're doing in North America is really nice, and they've got out of Europe now, like you said, Mike. So she's balancing today and tomorrow very well.
Right.
Yeah, and you just brought up a point that I think is critically important. General Motors is the only car company in the world that is deliberately shrinking its manufacturing footprint. And again, if you believe we're headed to a world of fewer cars with all this mobility, as I do, that's the only way that this makes sense. But again, no other car company in the world would have the guts to pull out of a market as big as Europe.
It would have never happened with old GM.
Well, you talk about profits, though. Those profits aren't coming from the EVs. Those are coming from pickup trucks, SUVs,
right.
I guess crossovers to a lesser extent. So, I mean, that shift to EVs, that is going to be way more difficult than I think anyone is actually looking into right now, especially when your profits for GM, Chrysler, Fiat Chrysler, they're all coming, profits are coming from the pickups, and SUVs, not the cars.
Mm-hmm. But you know, to the point of the electrified vehicles or the electric vehicles, I mean, isn't the greater percentage of those vehicles going to be sold in China anyway? So, I mean, that's their plan, is like, okay, we'll have all these models in China. And I mean, and Ford has basically said the same thing,
sure,
that there'll be this focus on there because of the regulations in China that are going to basically
and the subsidies
demand that you know, that Chinese car buyers buy electric. And so they'll have a few here. And, you know, I don't think it'll make that much difference on their margins.
A zero emissions future. That's what GM's shooting for. And if there's
fuel
for that, I mean,
I think there's a certain amount of rhetoric in that. I thought it was very interesting. Is that I was thinking about, you know, the autonomous thing. And so I saw the list from the California DMV about the accident reports that they have for 2017. And if you remember that, Kyle Vaught, who's the president of Cruise Automation. Who's his, you know, which General Motors bought, right? And, you know, that they were making a big deal out of the fact that they're testing their cars in San Francisco, whereas Waymo is in some
sunny Phoenix,
some little podunk town outside of Phoenix, not even in Phoenix.
Sure.
And so they're saying, oh, you know, this is more realistic, and you know, we're getting better data and that sort of thing. So the list of autonomous vehicle accident reports for 2017. So Cruise, Zooks, Cruise.
Uh-oh.
Cruise, Waymo, UATC, Cruise, Google. Cruise.
But come on now.
How much of that is
This is a reported.
How much of that is user error, though, somebody backing into it?
And most of these are like 2 mile an hour, you know, fender benders.
I'm just saying.
Well, the other thing could be is this is California, right?
This is.
And you said that Waymo's testing where?
Well, in
Arizona.
Right.
But their bulk is in San Fran. Yeah.
So I'm saying, is this really a good idea to be testing their cars in San Francisco? And this is their...
Well, I guess better to get all those accidents out of the way now.
So basically they're using us as lab rats?
Well, hey, Tesla's
no, that's
for a
Tesla.
While.
I mean...
Well, no, but I'm talking to General Motors. I just gave her a present. I mean, come on.
And they are expanding. They're expected to expand in New York City.
Yeah.
Next
oh, I wonder how that's going to be working out.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Because New Yorkers and Silicon Valley tech drivers... Two different people, I think, if you get into an accident with them. But
right.
And I'm sure the taxis are going to love these autonomous vehicles.
Yeah, can you imagine that?
Them extinct.
Right.
So
yeah.
I'm sure they'll just be happy to, you know, talk it over with them.
Yeah,
that's right.
It'll look like Mad Max. All right, John, you got a prisoner?
Well, I got one, and then we'll have to take a break. But, you know, I'm surprised it hasn't come up yet. But I'm giving Elon Musk a lump of coal, a big lump of coal.
Ooh.
And the reason I'm saying that, though, is, yeah, see, I told you, with the nice green ribbon around the piece of coal, I like that graphic. But all I'm giving him the lump of coal for is their inability to make the Model 3. And I believe it was Elon pushing his people way too far, skipping all the prototyping, skipping all the tryouts, skipping out all this stuff to show how Silicon Valley can do things a whole lot faster. And I think the whole thing is blown up in his face. And so, for this very specific reason, because there's other things that I like about Elon and Tesla, but this Model 3 fiasco deserves a lump of coal.
I mean, did anyone who actually is watching the industry think that they were going to get this off the ground without any bumps? Because I did not even expect that they would start producing it now. And they pretty much just have a capture fleet with customers. Mm-hmm. I mean, they might have gotten some to actual customers by now. But, I mean, they're just pretty much in the capture fleet mode right now. 10,000 units by the end of the first month and then 20,000 by the end of the year, I think. I never expected that to happen. So that's why I kind of, you know, Elon's a visionary. But I didn't actually expect him to deliver on that vision for the Model 3.
Mm-hmm. All right, Mike Martinez, you were rubbing your hands when he said Elon Musk. So tell us what the...
I got to say, you're right in terms of the vision, right? It's really nice to think about what he wants to do for not only for this country, but for the world, for Mars. It's a fun dream to buy into.
Mars.
But at the end of the day, that's all it is. the execution is just not there. What was the third quarter? He missed his production targets by, what, 77, 78%? Maybe it was 80. I can't quite remember. If you get that mark, whether it's school, whether it's any sort of job, you're fired. And I'm sorry, there's been a completely unfair double standard for Tesla versus the rest of the industry, and you're starting to see maybe that the emperor doesn't have any clothes right now. Everything he's selling really hasn't come to fruition. Maybe years from now, we can look back and say that he started to bend the arc towards EVs, towards a cleaner future, that it was good for the planet.
I think we can
push
say that
others
now.
To do that. Yeah,
yeah
push
no,
others
I think
to
we can
that.
Say that
yeah.
now.
But still, you got to deliver, and he's not.
That's right. You know, Tesla's danger right now is it's an asterisk, the footnote of history, that, you know, it did all this cool stuff, got all this buzz, and then blew up like a supernova.
Well, we were talking about Dodge and marketing doing so well. One thing Elon did amazingly is, here's the Semi. Look over here. Oh, and here's the Roadster.
Right. Yeah.
Forget about the Model 3.
Yeah.
Don't write about the Model 3 production woes.
Yeah.
Look over here at this brand new Semi that we're going to produce, that we're getting pre-orders for, well, and this Roadster.
Okay, so you know, last week the number was with the Semi, and there was another 125 units ordered now by UPS.
Yeah.
Okay, so now that number has gone up even further. So I look at it from the point of view of, okay, those of us here in Detroit might want to say, oh, this is all smoke and mirrors, and, you know, he's just kidding everyone. But I would like to know how companies like Anheuser-Busch and UPS and Walmart, companies that are known for due diligence and understanding things, why they would not only, you know, make reservations for these vehicles, but actually publicize the fact they're doing that.
It's all PR.
You're
come
connected,
on.
You're no, but, connected okay. to Tesla, and it's only a $5,000 okay, deposit.
But here's my point. If this is all smoke and mirrors, then wouldn't you just keep quiet about that? I mean, would you want to be associated with something that could be sham-like? Because
right,
you know,
now you want to be associated with them,
yeah.
And they are. They've jumped on the bandwagon.
So it's still good for them to do
yes.
that.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
They're not going to get these things for a couple of years if they get them at all.
Right.
And there are other truck companies that are rushing to the market with medium-duty as well as heavy-duty trucks. And, you know, this could easily be a way for these big fleet purchasers to put pressure on the Freightliners and the Internationals and the others of the world to say, hey, did you see their price? Look at that. Now this is the target you got to hit.
Right.
Sure.
So,
well, their price and their specs, I mean, they're still beating all of, you know, Thor and these other companies that are coming out with things. So,
well, during the
But you don't believe anything's going to happen.
During the unveiling,
kind of with Mike M.
I mean, they did show me something at some point, right? It can't be all talk.
Yeah.
They did the 0-60 of the Semi. What kind of truck driver cares about 0-60 in a Semi when most of the time they're going through traffic? I mean, the things that they were showing, and Mike,
have you driven on I-75?
we talked about that they actually had a trucker, one of the publications, go through the truck, and he said the ergonomics of it are just terrifying for a regular trucker. And it's not meant to be a coast-to-coast freight-lining vehicle. It's more of a, let's take this from the distribution center and go one way,
yeah,
very
right.
in a region.
Right. Short hauls,
short
not
hauls.
Long hauls. Hey, look, we got to take a quick commercial break right now. We got a ton of mail and questions and lumps of coal and present suggestions coming in from our viewers. So we're going to have to get to that as well. But first, we got to give a shout out to our good friends at Lear.
Lear Kinexus offers a parental controls application with geofencing that sends notifications regarding driving behavior and location, including curfew alerts, acceleration alerts, and speed alerts. All delivered to a smartphone application that includes vehicle location, driver notifications, and a report card of driving history, including notifications when predefined geographic boundaries are crossed. For more information, visit Lear.com.
Okay, we're back with our presents and coal that we're handing out right now. So we're back to Mike Wayland.
I was going to do a present, but since we already talked about GM EV strategy, I'm going to do another piece of coal. And that commercial was talking about geofencing. I'm going to give my coal to Uber. I said this on our show when we were talking. They were kind of like a creepy Santa that watched you 5 minutes after you stopped using the app. which just seems naughty for one. And then everything else going on with the CEO and the sexual harassment claims there and different things that have been going on. Uber gets my lump of coal.
So those who are not familiar, so basically what you were talking about is that if somebody used the Uber app, took a ride in the app, and then cashed out, got out of the vehicle and went on their merry way, that they were actually
monitoring
following
5 minutes after that.
Right.
And then, I mean, they've had some... Like,
well, let's not forget about the fact that they were trying to follow cops, undercover cops, and they had some sort of spyware that could track them so they could know if a cop was trying to order an Uber to try to catch them in an illegal, you know, place like an airport or wherever that may have been. So they were spying on cops. They were spying on the public. Whole mess of problems with this
company. Plus, they hired this this woman to come in and be like their head of communications and all that, and she was going to clean up the image, and she quit the company in like not even a year. I think she was there like 8 months and quit.
Her job was done. She just got it all taken care of. Well, you know, and they just got what was it? The European Union has just came out yesterday, I think, and defined them as being a taxi service company, not a independent contracting thing. That's going to have a big effect on them. London has basically said, you're going to be done here. They're appealing that. But, you know, a place like that, I mean, it's a huge hit to that company because, you know, there are so many Ubers being used there.
I didn't say sexual harassment claims. What I should have said was just some of the things that people had to go through, like emails from the CEO talking about fraternity-type parties or whatever and things like that, not necessarily the claims that we've been hearing out of Hollywood and different stuff like that.
Right, but this was Travis Kalanick, the new...
Yes, Travis Kalanick.
Not the new CEO who has been in that chair. They hired him from, what was it?
But let's not forget, though, Travis still has a seat on the board, so he's trying to still exercise some power. So it's a whole mess anywhere you look with Uber. I wouldn't want to be there.
No, they're idiots. Look, they were the first to the market. They had this $60 billion market capitalization, which has since been greatly reduced because of all these bonehead moves. I mean, they came in all elbows and assholes, and they made enemies everywhere they went in the world. And they had this market to themselves, just about. So, good lump of coal.
Do you give a present to Lyft?
I was literally going to say, you know who benefits from all this? Lyft.
Yeah.
And Lyft, the automakers have been teaming up with Lyft. GM still has $500 million that they've got a 50% return on that about, I believe, Ammon said. And Lyft is just benefiting from Uber's demise. However, Lyft is still domestic.
Pretty small potatoes.
Yes. Yep. So they still have to go global. And I think a lot of the fundraising that they're doing now might actually help them do that.
Yeah, let's keep in mind, besides all this trouble that they're having, they're also hemorrhaging money. They have an unprofitable business model. So,
and they don't own any of the assets. You know, it's like crazy.
They're a tech company, though. That doesn't matter.
Okay, let's go to a few viewers' presents and coals. Cooper Anderson, boy, that's got to be a made-up name, says Ford ought to get a present for digging into mobility and embracing the future of instead of being stuck in the past. And he gives a present to Lincoln. He says the Continental is a beauty, not sporty, but proper luxury. Alan Lavoine, and I hope I said that right, gives a lump of coal to Tesla. Nothing but hype, he says. Delivered nothing. So, yowza.
He's not lying.
Okay.
I give Lincoln a present, too.
What?
Because they got rid of the MK naming culture.
Oh, yeah. Well, Dan the Man also said, give Lincoln a present for going back to names.
Yes, I like that. And you know what? The new Navigator looks nice, but Lincoln's a lot of hype right now, too. I mean, they're still really small, and they need to grow much bigger.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. I'd just like to point out to you, Mr. Martinez, and you, viewer, that how many vehicles did Ferrari move so far this year in the United States?
About 2,600.
I was going to say.
Okay. How many did Tesla move? Over 40,000.
So. Oh, come on.
I'm serious.
Yeah, but who's making money? Who's got a market cap?
We don't know if Ferrari's making money.
Oh, yes, they are.
Yeah,
Ferrari knows
do.
That they don't want to become public. A mass production automaker. Tesla still seems to think that they
Sergio
can.
Sergio some time.
Ferrari made about $1 billion net on 9,000 cars.
Right.
That's pretty good.
Whose stock is valued higher?
Yeah.
Who is making more money for investors?
Wall Street makes a lot of sense right now. Just doing the auto industry.
It's crazy.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
It's Mike Martinez's turn, right?
Yeah. No, I'd like to give a lump of coal and maybe get serious for a second here with all these allegations, not necessarily new allegations, out of Ford and its troubled Chicago plants. You saw that kind of bombshell New York Times story on Tuesday.
Go into that, and just in case some of the viewers haven't seen that story.
Sure. So essentially for over two decades now, there's been this really systemic culture of sexual harassment and discrimination at Ford Chicago Assembly and Chicago Stamping Plant. There's been lawsuits. There's a lawsuit back in the 90s that they settled and were supposed to change things. Turns out they didn't. There's another lawsuit in 2014. They just settled with the EEOC for $10 million. And still nothing's changed.
So total bill to date is well over $30 million.
It's been crazy. And it's sad to see what these women are going through. You look at the lawsuit filed in 2014. One of them said, it's not work. It's like we're walking into a meat market. That's not right. So anybody who's associated with these plants deserves more than a lump of coal. But they're getting it from me because this is not right. And especially in light of everything that's going on in Hollywood with some powerful men. They need to be held accountable. Ford needs to be held accountable. They came out with this laundry list of things they're doing about training and certain hours of training. But when you peel that back, you find out most of that they were forced to do with the settlement with the EEOC. This is not right. It needs to change. And on the flip side of that coin, though, all these women deserve presents because they're not going away. They're not staying quiet. They need to keep fighting this to see some real change here. And it's about time. Ford always says we're about improving people's lives, making people's lives better. They need to start with the people in their own plants.
So Mike, you cover Ford, so you're closer to them than the rest of us are. So when you talk to people at various levels within the organization, from the office suites down, do you get a sense of them being sufficiently attentive to problems like this?
It's so hard because oftentimes you're told not to say anything, to don't bring the problem up. So if you're a supervisor, if you're somebody who would willingly want to help, you're often unaware of it. Because when you do bring up these problems, a lot of times you're ostracized from your fellow workers, from other management. You know, a lot of times as soon as you bring up a problem, then they'll check every single thing about you with microscopic detail and write you up for any little thing. So you're often discouraged for saying anything.
And I don't think it's just a Ford problem, honestly. Ford's in the spotlight right now with this, but Sharon Carty, so Carty, who's been on the show before,
right,
led a Project XX for Automotive News that talked about sexism in the auto industry. And they did a really good kind of package on it and just showed that even though it seems like a lot of it has gone away over the decades, that it's still here. And it can be anything from just a few comments to actual... Like
abuse.
We're talking about, yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I wouldn't single out the auto industry. This is a societal issue.
Yes.
And we can pick on the auto industry, but Mike Martinez, I know how to fix this problem at Ford, and they won't do it. You call everybody into the plant into a meeting, and you have all your homework done ahead of time. And then you tell everybody that this has been an ongoing problem, and we know who the problem people are. And you read them off by name in front of everyone and tell them to get the hell out of the plant because they're fired right now. And I guarantee you that will put an end to it. And if it keeps on going, you keep calling the meetings and firing these people in front of everybody else. Like I said, you better have your homework. You better have all your documentation. But until you do that, you are not going to change that.
Well, you better have the UAW on your side, too, though, because they can't.
The UAW is a big problem in it because they're defending these guys.
I'll tell you what happened. Back in 2014, there was a plant manager named in the lawsuit, plant chairman. He was suspended. Ford didn't say why, for confidentiality reasons, but it was about the same time the lawsuit came out. You put two and two together. He was suspended for 2 weeks. When he came back, the UAW filed a grievance against Ford challenging that suspension.
Yeah.
And this is a guy who was named doing some very horrible things.
The UAW's got huge problems in this issue. Remember back coming right out of the recession, one of the local TV crews got a tip-off, and they went down by the Jefferson North plant where they build the Jeeps.
Yeah.
They found these guys taking their mid-morning break, going out to a park, drinking their brains out, smoking all kinds of weed and stuff like, and going back to the plant.
Yep.
The union said, hey, wait a minute, you can't fire those guys. There's a process we have to go through here. And they're doing the same thing with the sexual harassment in Chicago. And I'm telling you, the only way to put an end to it is you got to make an example of the offenders in a way that is very visible and understandable to everyone. That's how you put an end to it.
And let's carry this coal conversation out a little bit further. You mentioned the UAW. I think they deserve a lump of coal here, too. They have a couple high-profile losses in organizing efforts in the South, and you have these corruption allegations happening at the training centers in Detroit. Absolutely about as Scrooge-ish as you can get. You're allegedly stealing funds.
$1.5 million.
Millions of dollars that are supposed to go to blue-collar workers for their training for various things. You're taking it to buy $1,000 pens. Norwood Jewel reportedly got a couple $1,000 shotgun. Are you kidding me? They should be ashamed of themselves, whoever's involved. Dennis Williams said the other day a couple people have been let go, so it seems like they're starting to address this. But come on, that's as bad as it gets for a union that's supposed to be about inclusion and representing the community. It's a black mark on the UAW.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to keep on beating on the but I totally agree with what you're saying. Okay.
Let's go to
Gary, it's your
time.
Let's
go to
a gift.
Merry Christmas.
I do have a present.
We'll go to the number.
Oh, yeah. It's time for Dr. Data. Jeez.
Okay. So we're going to shift here and make something a little bit more jolly, okay? So this number this is a holiday number. Now, there's two parts to you guys figuring this one out. First, you have to identify what the number is and why the number is important for the season. Okay, so it's seasonal. So it just isn't determining what the number is, because I'm sure one of you guys is going to get it like that. But why am I...
I have a bad record on these things. So
that's all right. So Carmen, please bring up the first slide. So it's $1.28 billion. Okay, what could $1.28 billion be? Anybody.
And it's tied into the season?
Well, it's... Identify the number first and then the seasonal reason.
All right. I'm going to say it's the amount of money spent on those stupid little antlers and other things that you put on your cars around Christmas time.
Jesus.
It could not be that big of a market.
No. Please don't do that, by the way. Anybody who does that, come on.
The distance traveled by Santa delivering presents?
No.
I have no idea. The number of snowflakes that are going to fall on Christmas.
Carmen, the answer, please. It's the number of air fresheners that Santa will need to deliver to all of the light vehicles in the world. So I'm helping Santa out here, and so I have a seasonal air freshener for each of you.
Right.
It matches my sweater. Look at that.
Royal pine.
Well, of course, because I had, what am I going to get, like, mango? I mean, this is like, so it's the Christmas season, so we had a seasonal number.
Thank you.
Thank you, Gary. Your gift's in the mail.
That's great. Hey, we got a couple of phone calls. Why don't we bring one of those in right now, Carmen?
Hi, this is Declan Bitts from York, Pennsylvania. I have a question. Will General Motors take the lead and press government to promote and subsidize EV cars to gain a bigger share? Let's see if who takes the lead in America first.
Well, I think all the automakers just dodged a bullet. The tax plan that the Republicans came out with, they had threatened to take away the EV subsidy, and they did not. So, and... I'll bet behind the scenes all automakers were whispering in the ears of any regulator or legislator, please leave the credit in.
I was going to say, I don't think it's going to be one automaker. I think it's going to be the alliance, the Alliance of Automobile Manufacturers, who kind of leads the way for their in Washington.
And I think you have to be careful, too, now, because you're already picking a fight over the administration with NAFTA. So you kind of got to balance what...
Pick your fights.
Exactly.
Yeah. Hey, we've got another phone call. Let's bring that one in, too.
Hey, guys. This is Youngblood calling from Cleveland, Ohio.
All right.
I got a present from the Peanut Gallery for your last out-of-line after-hours with that guy from Aston Martin, Simon Spurl. That episode was fantastic. I was just amazed on how much information you guys could drag out of him with just a casual conversation. I had to watch it at least three times. It was fantastic. A present for you for that episode from the Peanut Gallery. And Merry Christmas, guys. Later. Bye.
Merry Christmas, Youngblood. Thanks for that. That was a great show. That was a lot of fun.
And plus, Simon has a British accent, so he said anything.
I thought he was going to give us a present for this show, but the last show was good,
too. Well, keep going.
Keep working harder.
Gary, it's your turn, isn't it?
Yes. Okay, so I want to give a present to Kia for developing the Stinger. And so it seems to me that, you know, hamsters and NBA sponsorship can get you only so far in this industry, but to come out with a performance sports sedan is fantastic.
Because everyone's buying sedans right now.
Well, yeah. Well, but again, look at what we said about Dodge. There's a market for that sort of thing. I'll tell you what, I had the opportunity to drive one for a night last Tuesday. If you remember what was going on last Tuesday in Michigan.
Snowing like crazy.
It was snowing like crazy.
So you had the all-wheel drive
version?
That thing
was useless.
Oh.
Yeah.
So you didn't have the all-wheel drive?
No, they hadn't put on the winter tires or anything like that.
All right.
I was slipping and sliding all over. I felt bad because I wanted to love it, and it looks like it's going to be a great vehicle.
Mm-hmm. I grew up driving a 97 Mustang in the snow, and I would have loved driving that Stinger in the snow because you can have some fun in that. Come on.
But listen, you can't go up.
He was trying to get to work, for God's sake. You were fooling around. Come on.
I'll bet the car is pretty good with snow tires, though.
Well, yeah, and, you know, of course. You know, nobody would do well in that. But for what it's worth and for the market that it's in, it's a great car.
Well, I mean, I just sort of get the thing that, you know, if you think about Kia, right? I mean, and so historically, you know, cheap and cheerful cars. And, I mean, I think the Optima changed that when, you know, that became a new style statement for that company, the same way that when their sister or parent or whatever, we want to look at the DNA that Hyundai has, you know, when they came out with the 2011 Sonata. I mean, it's just like everybody's like, wow, this is, you know, a relevant company. And I just think that it's nice that here's a company that's saying, okay, you know, it's one thing to have regular vehicles out there and crossovers and so on. But, you know, in order for us to really put a stake in the ground and say, hey, here we are, look at us in a good way, I think that the Stinger sort of indicates that.
I haven't driven it, but I think it looks great. And I think it is helping the brand transform itself a little bit. So
it's all about marketing.
Yeah.
There you go.
Hey, we got a lot more presents in coal as well as viewer comments on what should get presents in coal. But right now we got to give a shout out to our good friends at Bridgestone.
Bridgestone Drive Guard tires are engineered to come through in the clutch.
Let's go.
And NFL coach John Gruden is going to help us prove it.
I got this.
Okay, tires. If you take a hit, you got to get back up.
John.
You better kick it up a notch and get us home. There's always going to be nails on the road to victory, but you keep on going.
Actually, drive guard tires can take a puncture and drive up to 50 miles to safety.
50 miles?
Yep.
Guess my pep talk worked.
Sure.
Okay, we're back talking all about presents and coal for the end of the year for the auto industry. I'm going to rip through some of the viewer comments real fast right now. Bill Walk says he gives a present to Trump, the greatest president, and he gives a present to Mazda's new engine. We'll get to what I have to say about Trump later. Greg H. says, whoever created the Chevy truck commercial showing the toolbox cutting through the F-150's bed. Personally, I hate that ad, and I don't think it's done anything for Chevy Silverado ads, but that's what he gives a present to. Mike McAllister gives a present to IndyCar for making the series competitive and enjoyable. And, Mike, I'm totally with you on that. Forever Free gives GM a present for infotainment. Okay, now on the coal side.
Yeah.
Mike Whalen.
Mike Whalen, who covers General Motors, for all you on the podcast.
Okay, hold on. We're giving our viewers their shot at this, and then we can weigh in. Mike McAllister is giving a lump of coal to Ferrari. He says, who would actually be upset if Ferrari pulled out of F1? Also gives coal to the FCA for poor reliability. And I'm with you, man. Ferrari, I don't like Ferrari threatening to pull out of F1, you know, if you're not going to play the way we want to, we're taking our ball and go home. Anyway, Alexander Karabitsa says the entire German industry gets a lump of coal for their suspected collusion that they were accused of. Levante A says he gives a lump of coal to Acura. They desperately need to redesign their vehicles. Also lumps of coal to GM's Ecotec and FCA's 2.4-liter multi-air engines, and coal to Nissan and Infiniti's infotainment. What is this? Rala from Cincinnati says senior management at VW, who masterminded Dieselgate. And while they threw Oliver Schmidt to the wolves, Matt the viewer says a lump of coal to the carmaker's obsession with ultra-low profile tires, which we've talked about here. And Forever Free says he gives a lump of coal to GM for the 2018 Equinox and Terrain with start that you cannot turn off And Cole, to everyone who puts panoramic roofs on the 2018s.
Woo!
So there you go.
I completely agree with the stop-start. I don't like it, but GM has done a good execution of it on the Traverse and the Equinox and the Terrain. But, yeah, it would be nice to have an option to turn it off like you do in Fiat Chrysler.
Yeah.
And many other cars.
Yeah. Almost all of them.
Okay. Whose turn is it?
Yours.
Oh, my. Yeah.
Well, okay. I said I'd get to Trump, and I'm giving Trump a lump of coal.
Is it clean coal?
It's got to be clean coal. That's all there is. But I'm giving Trump a lump of coal for one very specific thing, and that's backing off the V2V mandate, which the industry had pretty much agreed on that they were going to implement, I think, by 2020.
Okay, explain what that is.
Oh, V2V allows cars to communicate with each other, and that can help almost make it impossible for cars to crash into each other. I think this would have been the greatest step forward in automotive safety, almost rivaling the seatbelt in terms of the safety that it can provide. And Cadillac has already gone ahead and put it on several of their models, I believe. And I would really like to see the – is it just a CT6?
I believe. Yeah. Okay. CTS.
Oh, CTS.
Yes, it's
okay.
CTS.
No, CT6.
Maybe
I just wrote a story about it. So.
Okay. But anyway, my lump of coal is for that specific. I'm not trying to get into politics with the rest of Trump. All I'm telling you is backing off that mandate is a bad thing.
Yeah, it'd be nice to see politicians maybe not, you know, just automatically go along party lines or whatever they've always thought and take a look and see what, you know, maybe where you do need some regulation, where you do need some government oversight or to help spur the industry to move forward. But again, when we're talking V2V, we're talking things like you can share weather conditions, you can share if there's an accident ahead, you can share some very critical information.
So like when you were driving the Stinger in the snow, you'd be able to send information back to cars saying, it's really damn slippery here.
Yeah.
The car would do that. You wouldn't.
Exactly.
You were just sitting there cursing. And so.
No, that would tell cars, get in the next lane because Mike's blocking yours. Yeah. You can't get anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Or at least throw on some winter tires and you'll be fine. Yeah.
Bingo.
Okay. We got to get, I think it's Mike Whalen's turn, but Pedal Foot Autos gives a present to FCA for not screwing up the Wrangler.
That was literally my present to Mark Allen at Jeep.
Yeah.
He is a great guy. I've talked to him for years, and they had one mission, as we've talked about before, do not screw up the Wrangler.
Right.
And to the best of my knowledge so far, we haven't driven it yet, and, you know, we haven't seen him on the road that much yet. We've seen the prototypes, but it looks like a Wrangler, and that's all they needed to do.
I drove it. The car is brilliant. Yeah. It's the best Wrangler ever.
So, yeah, that was my gift.
I don't mean that as faint praise. This is a fantastic vehicle. They've really upped their game. And, yeah.
And stayed true to the tradition.
Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And I would say that the show with Mark Allen was probably better than the show with Simon Sproul. But just saying. That was and that was, what, 3 weeks ago or so?
So
if you haven't seen that and you like Jeeps, Mark Allen just holding forth.
Well, I mean, the Cherokee we saw come out and everyone criticized it for the headlights and just kind of being a face that only a mother could love. But Jeep, the Wrangler, it's that iconic image that they have to keep no matter what. And they knew that. And I didn't have doubt too much that they weren't going to screw it up. But, it's Fiat Chrysler. So.
Yeah.
It seems like they kept all the positives, everything people like about it, and maybe some of the sore spots or some of the difficult things, taking the doors off or the roof, made it a little easier.
More tech,
much easier.
And more tech, and, I mean, bringing up to the safety codes, too, so that they could make it better.
Yeah.
And from the ride I heard, too, just being driving, it's much better.
Yeah, right? You know, it's always had amazing rock-crawling capabilities, and it continues that. But now it's a very civilized vehicle on the highway or driving around town. It's not my first choice for a daily commuter, but you can commute daily on it in much more comfort than the prior versions. Okay, whose turn? Michael Martinez.
You know, I'm going to give a lump of coal to Mark Fields.
Yeah.
Gone but not forgotten. Listen, I don't understand how you can oversee a period of record profitability, completely hit a home run with the redesign of your most profitable vehicle in the F-150, and not be able to keep your job. Something was not right there. And you look at it on the way out, he tried to throw Joe Hendricks under the bus. I reported on that earlier this year. Not a good look there. the point, though, is I think 2017 is going to go down as the year that a lot of automakers, we've known about autonomous electrification, the future, we've known it's coming for a while. 2017 is the year that automakers had to reckon with that and make some decisions. And one of the first big ones we saw with Ford, the board of directors said, we don't think you have a clear vision. So despite everything you've done, despite the great times we're in, think about when the last CEO was let go in a period of relative quiet, you know, not surrounding a scandal, not surrounding a bankruptcy, not government mandated, but just let go during good times. It's been a while, right? So the board's saying we need to focus on the future. You weren't able to do that.
So do you think that now that he is gone, that there's more clarity within the Ford Motor Company when it comes to autonomy, when it comes to electrification, or is it just the rhetoric being said by someone else?
We're still in early days, right? And obviously it hasn't been a year yet with Jim Hackett, but you start to think that there's a more coherent message internally in what's being described to us in the media, and that goes a long way, right? It seemed like sometimes in prior years, they just throw out numbers just to throw out numbers. But now we're starting to see the why behind what they're doing and starting to see, you know, this is what we want to do holistically. Here's all the different pieces. The puzzle's starting to come together. You're seeing that with Lincoln, too. I'd agree with the present for Lincoln because they've been on this journey, right, this sort of philosophical term, but now they're putting the puzzle pieces together, whether it's the name change, whether it's the new vehicles. So you're seeing that with both brands there.
I'd say they bought the puzzle and they're unpacking it at the moment. I wouldn't say they're trying to separate the corners from the middle, but I don't think they have their vision set just yet because it is early days with Hackett. And it's going to take a while to get them on the right footing to this path. And they've kind of laid out their vision, as Mike said, with the hybrid path, which is different from GM and anything anyone else is doing right now, too.
Yeah, I agree with you, Mike. But I also think the Ford board needs to clean house on that board. They had no succession plan with their decision to fire Fields. Fields had obviously been presenting his plans to them all along, and they're the ones who okayed it and said, go out and do this. And I think you've got a lot of people that have been on the Ford board a long time, and they've become a little too comfortable with what's going on at the company. I think it's time for Ford to shake that board up.
And it's, you know, unlike any automaker, maybe with FCA, but, you know, you have the Ford family looming over all of this. So it can be a tricky thing.
Oh, you know, and I'm not calling for the family member. And there's only two, right? It's Bill Ford Jr. And Edsel. Yeah. They're going to be on there. I have no question about that. But there's some other stalwarts that have been on the board a long time. And I think it's incumbent on board of directors to be shaken up every now and then because they get a little too palsy-walsy with management. And their job is to have the wall between them and management. They're there to make sure that the management's feet are kept to the fire. And I don't see that happening. And I'm shocked that they didn't have the job handed over to Joe Hinrichs or somebody else, that they didn't have a plan in place that in case anything happened to Mark Fields, what if he stepped off the curb and got hit by the bus? They didn't have a plan in place. Or they just decided that plan's no good. But I think the board's got a lot of explaining to do at the Ford Motor Company.
I agree.
And I was okay with them actually bringing in Hackett because he was an outside influence from the auto industry. And I like Hinrichs, I like Farley, but they needed to be shaken up a bit through the company cultural. Hmm. And I don't think Hinrichs or Farley could have done it as much as Hackett is about to do that.
Well, it's almost like Alan Mulally Light in a way, or Alan Mulally 2.0. Yeah, it's more about the culture than the actual physical products they have because in that regard, they're doing well.
Except a lot more football analogies.
Yeah,
Hackett.
Yeah, but you know, look, Hackett's a placeholder. The guy's going to be there, what, a couple of years, and then boom, he's going to be gone.
Well, you never know.
Well, I guess I don't for sure. But my guess is Hackett's just going to be in there for a few years.
Hackerson, like?
Well, you know, Hackett's what, 62, 63 years old, something like that. Typically, he'd be gone by 65. The board can extend it. You're right, that could happen. My guess is he's a placeholder. They still don't have the confidence in Hinrichs or Farley, they can't make up their mind as to who they want to give the company to. I don't think either one of them are going to get it myself. But you cannot have long-term planning for a company when your CEO is only there for a few years and gone again? Because the new CEO is going to come in and say, here's how we're changing everything so I can put my mark on the company. Anyway, I'll step off my
seat. All right, I got some coal here. I want to give coal to Takata for the airbag scandal. And I was looking up the numbers today on that. And so according to NHTSA, 34 million vehicles are currently under recall for approximately 46 million defective Takata airbags.
Wow.
And what really astonished me even more was when I looked at the list, and I recommend that people go to the NHTSA website and check to see if there are vehicles on there. And, you know, I just thought that's a few Asian brands that were using the Takata airbags. Acura, Audi, BMW, Cadillac, Chevy, Chrysler, Daimler Trucks, Daimler Vans, Dodge, Ram, Ferrari, Fisker, Karma, Ford, GMC, Honda, Infiniti, Jaguar, Jeep, Land Rover, Lexus, Lincoln, Mazda, McLaren, Mercedes, Mercury, Mitsubishi, Nissan, Pontiac, Saab, Saturn, Scion, Subaru, Tesla, Toyota, and Volkswagen. All have Takata airbags. And according to NHTSA, they think that there will be an additional, by December 2019, the number of affected airbags will be 65 to 70 million.
And the scary part is only about 50%. There was a report, I believe earlier this month, only about 50% of people have gotten them fixed. And I got to say, I'm a bit of a hypocrite here. I have a 2010 Dodge Challenger. Sorry.
Yeah.
It'll happen soon, I promise. But it's a very important thing, and it's a very scary, serious issue. Yeah, these guys should.
Yeah, I mean, you can get shrapnel blown up in your face. And so we had Robert Davis on from Mazda, and he was talking about how they're urging, you know, all of the people to get it fixed. Honda's taken to Facebook to try to get this, you know, for people to
goes private eyes, personal investigators.
So Honda had their media reception last night, you know, end of year media reception. One of the things I learned there is they have hired private investigators to go out to people's houses and knock on the door and say, please, please, please bring your car in. We've got the airbag. We can fix it. And the pushback they're getting is amazing. They had one person who pulled, like, his coat back so whoever the person at the door was could see the gun that he had on his belt and said, you come back to my house again, I'm shooting you.
Wow.
Well, and a lot of these.
So, well, how do you deal with that?
Right.
And a lot of them are second, third generation owners who, and if you can find them, I mean, it's an older car, and that's what they're having the biggest problem with, are these older vehicles,
not necessarily
the brand new ones.
Right.
Yeah, and the people who are looking at them and saying, why do I need to get anything fixed on this car? It's about to keel over and die anyway.
Right. So if you go to the NHTSA website and you know your VIN number and your VIN number is on your registration that you either have in your car or on your wallet, you can put the number in and it'll tell you whether your car is affected or not, so you know. And this is, you know, you can get this fixed by the dealer. It doesn't cost you anything.
It doesn't take a long time either. I got mine fixed, actually, and it was relatively simple. I had to get both the front driver's side and passenger side fixed, and it doesn't take that long.
But I mean, it's just unconscionable to me that, you know, you have a company that is putting out safety products that are not safe. I mean, you know, you could say
they lied and cheated all about it.
You know,
it's one thing to make a mistake. It's another thing to falsify test data and, you know, stonewall the investigators and all that sort of thing. Okay, I think it's my turn, but
get a happy one.
back to the viewers for a moment. A couple of presents. Levante A says he gives a present to Genesis for the G80 Sport and the upcoming G70. Nice cars. Alexander Karabitsa says, everyone on the Autoline crew deserves a present for the great work all year long. Keep it up and Merry Christmas.
Oh, I agree.
Yeah, we agree with that. Okay, Cole, SubGR77 says, Cole for the tire makers for almost abandoning 15-inch tires for anything but trucks. I'm not sure you can blame the tire companies. They'll build whatever the car companies want. I'd blame the product planners at the car companies. And Levante A also has a lump of coal for the Chrysler brand. He says, I love Chrysler, but I'm giving them coal because of a lack of vehicles. So he's right. And now it's my turn. I get to choose a present because that's what I'm going to do this time. And I'm giving one to Kevin Hunter, the head of Kelty Design at Toyota, because I've driven at least 100 new cars this year. I test drive everything, cars, trucks, vans, you name it. And that Lexus LC500 just knocked me out. The styling of that car is gorgeous. It came out of Kevin's studio in Southern California.
That's Kevin with a dark shirt on?
With the dark shirt there, yeah. And kudos to those guys. In my book, for my eyes, that is the most beautiful car that came out.
See, and I had Toyota and Lexus on my presence list because I would also give it up to Kevin and his crew for the new Camry that you have these two cars that, we all know that Camrys are highly reliable, and we all know that Lexuses give you all kinds of service and things like that. But here are these guys who are basically saying, you know what? We're going to provide style now. We're going to provide presence. We're going to have people, feel really good about the cars that we've developed. And I agree with you about that LC500. It's in the interior of that thing. Oh, my God.
Yeah. I just loved it. And I loved it so much. I don't even care what the stats are on it. The specs, the engine, the transmission, the brakes, none of that stuff mattered to me. I just wanted to sit in the car and drive.
And, I was there when they unveiled the concept of it in Detroit. And, it was just stunning. Mm-hmm. It really was. And I haven't been able to get into the production version. Mm-hmm. But, Toyota and Lexus, great job on that particular vehicle. And a lot of their designs actually for taking a step out of the norm mm-hmm. for a lot of them. And I think last time I was on the show, we talked the Prius and the Prius Prime. And I said, I'm okay with it. I'm okay with the wacky design that they did mm-hmm. because it's so not Toyota.
Okay, that was then. Have you come to grow to hate it like the rest of us?
You know what? There aren't that many of them driving around Detroit, so I don't see it very often. When I'm out in California, I see it, and I'm still okay with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, then I give you a lump of coal.
and Kevin Hunter grew up in Livonia, so he's a local boy.
Yeah. That's right.
So there he is in Newport Beach. So, there's always hope.
Okay. We're at the very end of the show here. Any last minute, a lump of coal or a present you're dying to give?
I'll do a quick one. Okay. Present to Nissan just for their marketing with Star Wars. come on. 2 years in a row now, that thing is good job with that. You LA Auto Show, that thing was like walking on Tatooine in the Lexus or the Nissan stand. It was amazing. You had battle droids and X-Wings everywhere. It was great.
And, I got to agree with you because they used the Rogue as the vehicle that they advertised with it. And, boy, did it sell. So there's a marketing campaign that really did work. So I'm with you on that one, Mike. Yeah.
Better than Subaru?
Equal.
With much less incentives. But
Mike Whalen, any last one?
We hit a lot of mine. We were talking about the GM Electrics, VW for coal. So I am all out of presents and coal. However, we'll see what I get from Santa this year. So.
Mm-hmm. I want to give a present to the audience for watching us. Not just this show, but throughout the year. And
totally agree. Yeah. Yep. We love the audience. We really do.
And for all of the people who took the time to chime in with their own presence.
Yeah, great comments.
Yeah, and actually we got a bunch of questions that were just industry related. Maybe we'll hold on to those questions. And like I said, next week Autoline After Hours is off the air, so is Autoline Daily because we're all taking a break. But we'll save these questions because there's some good ones in there. But with that, I think we're wrapping the show up.
All right.
So we got to thank the mics. Mike Whalen, Mike Martinez. Great having you guys here.
Thanks for having us.
Always a pleasure, John.
And Gary, what a fun year it's been.
It has indeed.
It's been great working with you.
Thanks, guys. It's been great. Thank you.
And of course, as we just said, we want to thank all of you.
Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires, your journey, our passion. And by Lear, a global leader in automotive seating and electrical systems.
Visit our website, autoline.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday afternoons. Get your daily fix with Autoline Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with Autoline This Week. There's all that and much more at autoline.tv.